Good morning, and welcome to the J. M. Smucker Company's Fiscal 2019 First Quarter Earnings Conference Call. This conference is being recorded, and all participants are in a listen-only mode. At the request of the company, we will open up the conference for questions and answers after the prepared remarks. Please limit yourself to two questions during the Q&A session and re-queue if you have additional questions. I will now turn the conference over to Aaron Broholm, Vice President, Investor Relations. Please go ahead, sir.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us for our fiscal 2019 first quarter earnings conference call. Mark Smucker, President and CEO, and Mark Belgia, Vice Chair and CFO, will provide our prepared comments. Also participating in the Q&A are Tina Floyd, Senior Vice President and General Manager, Consumer Foods, Dave Lemon, President, Pet Food and Pet Snacks, and Joe Stanziano, Senior Vice President and General Manager, Coffee. During today's call, we will make forward-looking statements that reflect the company's current expectations about future plans and performance. These statements rely on assumptions and estimates, and actual results may differ materially due to risks and uncertainties. I encourage you to read the full disclosure concerning forward-looking statements in this morning's press release, which is located on our corporate website at jmsmucker.com. Additionally, please note the company uses non-GAAP results to evaluate performance internally, as detailed in the press release. We have posted to our website a supplementary slide deck summarizing the quarterly results and our fiscal 2019 full-year outlook. The slides can be accessed through the link to the webcast of this call and will be archived on our website, along with a replay of this call. If you have additional questions after today's call, please contact me. I will now turn the call over to Mark Smucker.
Thank you, Aaron. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us. Our first quarter performance reflects significant progress in realigning our portfolio to growth areas and on-trend categories. Smucker's Uncrustables, Dunkin' Donuts, Cafe Bustelo, Nature's Recipe, and Sahali Snacks all achieved double-digit sales growth in the quarter and in the aggregate accounted for 3 percentage points of top-line growth. The Rachael Ray Nutrish brand also achieved double-digit sales growth versus the comparable period in the prior year. Achieving increases in nearly every key area of the portfolio where we have made investments validates that we can continue to win in today's marketplace. Some of our established brands underperformed in their traditional categories in the quarter. These included Folgers, Jif, and Natural Balance. While some of this was timing related, our teams are hard at work executing specific plans to improve performance for these brands through the remainder of the year. Let me expand on these topics by using our coffee business as a proof point. We have previously shared our strategy to better align our coffee portfolio with consumer preferences by increasing our presence in both premium and one-cup coffee. Sales for our premium packaged coffee business grew 13%, while our K-cup portfolio increased 17%, with all our K-cup brands up in the first quarter. Growth in both our premium and one-cup segments continues to be led by the Dunkin' Donuts brand. Sales for the brand were up 13% in the quarter, which builds on 10% growth in the first quarter of last year. The current year also included contributions from our recently introduced canister format, which is generating incremental sales for both the Dunkin' Donuts brand and our overall coffee business. 1850 Premium Coffee was another contributor to growth in both the premium and one-cup segments. Launched in April, the brand has already hit our target ACV of 70% and is currently generating nearly $1 million in weekly retail sales and growing. To further build consumer awareness, our comprehensive $30 million marketing program is now underway. Although it is still early in the launch, we are excited by the initial pipeline fill and expect 1850 to be a growth platform for years to come. Stabilizing the Folgers roast and ground business also remains a key priority. In the near term, this includes capitalizing on greater than anticipated green coffee favorability by investing in elevated trade support. We also have key merchandising activities planned for the upcoming months. Longer-term initiatives to reinvigorate coffee rituals with this iconic brand are also in progress, and we look forward to sharing more in the future. Let me now provide a few first quarter highlights from the rest of our businesses. I'll use our strategic roadmap and its four pillars, innovation, investments, cost savings, and acquisitions, as a framework for my comments. In addition to 1850, we have a robust lineup of new products for fiscal 2019, reflecting our new platform approach to innovation. This includes Jif Power Ups, our new line of snack bars and peanut butter clusters that began shipping in May and are already off to an excellent start. Like 1850, we are supporting the launch of Jif Power Ups with significant retailer and consumer investments, including an integrated public relations and marketing campaign, which began this month. In pet, an area of emphasis has been rebuilding our pet snacks innovation pipeline, consistent with changes in consumer preferences. To that end, we have new product launches planned for the back half of the fiscal year, which we anticipate will drive over $100 million of annual incremental sales in the coming years. Most notably, we are excited to be expanding the Milk-Bone and Nature's Recipe brands into key segments of the pet snacks category, including rawhide alternatives and natural meat snacks. Turning to the second pillar of the roadmap, which is investments, momentum for the Smucker's Uncrustables brand remains strong. Company-wide sales were up 29% in the quarter, which built on 13% growth in the first quarter of last year. This reflects the continued strong growth for the brand in both our retail and away-from-home businesses. Construction of our new sandwich facility remains on track for completion in fiscal 2020. This facility will double production capacity, coinciding with the launch of our first ever national marketing campaign for Uncrustables. The third pillar of our strategic roadmap is generating cost savings to provide the fuel for investments in top line growth and margin protection and expansion. For fiscal 2019, we implemented our new cost containment program, Right Spend, to strengthen cost discipline throughout the organization and deliver a portion of our $80 million incremental cost savings goal for the year. We are also on track with our previously announced plans to relocate our pet food office in San Francisco to our corporate office here in Orrville. We are pleased with the number of key employees that have chosen to remain with the company, providing continuity of knowledge on our pet business. The final pillar of our strategic roadmap is acquisitions. We have now owned Ainsworth Pet Nutrition for a quarter. The business is continuing its strong track record of growth and meeting our performance expectations. With distribution expansion opportunities and significant growth prospects in cat food and pet snacks, the addition of the Rachael Ray Nutrish brand is accelerating growth in our pet business. In addition, we are making good progress towards achieving our stated synergy goal and completing a seamless integration of people, processes, and systems consistent with our initial plans to have these activities completed by the end of the fiscal year. While growth through acquisitions plays a key role in our strategy, we have also demonstrated a willingness to divest businesses that are no longer consistent with our strategic focus and direction. Given our focus on growing our pet, coffee, and snack food businesses, last month we announced the signing of a definitive agreement to divest our U.S. baking business. The process continues to move forward quickly, and we expect the transaction will close at the end of this month. As a result, we have updated our full-year guidance to reflect the anticipated impact of the divestiture, as Mark will discuss in a moment. To achieve these full-year expectations, We will capitalize on growth from new product launches, contributions from Ainsworth, and cost reductions, while minimizing the potential impact of inflationary pressures and increased competitive activity. In closing, let me reiterate that we are taking and will continue to evaluate appropriate actions that support our consumer-led strategy to be a food and beverage leader focused on high-growth, on-trend categories, whether through innovation, acquisitions, divestitures, or improving capabilities and execution in key areas. These actions are indicative of the fast pace of change within our company. We have a strong brand portfolio in great categories and are committed to stepping up investments to deliver growth and strengthen our brands, using cost savings, providing fuel for investment. Lastly, we have a great team of dedicated employees to execute this strategy, and I would like to thank all of them for their continued efforts. I will now turn the call over to Mark Belgya.
Thank you, Mark, and good morning, everyone. I will start with an overview of our first quarter results and then shift to an update on our full-year outlook. Adjusted earnings per share was $1.78 compared to $1.51 in 2018, an increase of 18%, primarily reflecting the benefit of tax reform. Included in this quarter's EPS was an $11 million or 7 cent per share unfavorable impact related to adjusting Ainsworth inventory to fair market value at the acquisition date in accordance with purchase accounting rules. Net sales increased 9% driven by the acquisition of Ainsworth. Excluding Ainsworth, net sales declined $9 million, reflecting the exit of certain Gravy Train products. In addition, a 1% impact from lower net price realization was slightly offset by volume mix. Adjusted gross margin was 36.8%, down 40 basis points, compared to the prior year, reflecting the Ainsworth inventory adjustment. Excluding this impact, adjusted gross margin increased 20 basis points, as a decline in net price realization and increased freight costs were more than offset by lower input costs, most notably for the coffee business. SD&A increased $35 million or 10% compared to 2018 due to the addition of Ainsworth. Excluding Ainsworth, SD&A expense was comparable to the prior year, as higher marketing expense was offset by budget spending discipline through our Right Spend program. Factoring in all of this, adjusted operating income increased $15 million or 5% compared to the prior year. Below operating income, interest expense increased $12 million driven by borrowing costs associated with the Ainsworth acquisition. An effective tax rate of 23.2% was slightly lower than our full-year guidance of 24.5% due to a deferred tax benefit related to the Ainsworth acquisition in the first quarter. Our full-year tax rate guidance remains unchanged. Let me turn to the segment-specific results, beginning with coffee. Net sales increased 2% compared to the prior year, driven by double-digit gains for the Dunkin' Donuts and Café Bustelo brands and contributions from 1850 Premium Coffee. Sales growth for Folgers K-Cup was more than offset by declines for Folgers Roast and Ground canisters, a portion of which was attributable to timing of promotional activities at certain key customers. These activities are now underway in the second quarter, and we are already seeing improved results. Coffee segment profit increased 20%, reflecting the benefit of lower green coffee costs and our lower K-Cup costs pursuant to our revised agreement with Keurig. This segment profit growth was achieved despite a $13 million or more than 50% increase in marketing expense for the quarter, approximately half of which was in support of the launch of the 1850 brand. In consumer foods, net sales were down 1% compared to the prior year. Excluding the baking business, which is pending divestiture, net sales were flat. Smucker's Uncrustables and Sahali Snacks achieved strong sales growth up 33% and 40% respectively in the quarter, while sales for Jif, Crisco, and our natural beverage brands declined. For Jif, this primarily related to the timing of merchandising at a key club customer. We continue to expect Jif to achieve sales growth on a full-year basis. Consumer food segment profit declined 12% compared to the prior year, reflecting higher commodity costs, most notably for peanuts, as well as higher freight costs. Unfavorable volume mix and higher marketing expense also contributed to the segment profit decline in the quarter. Turning to the pet food segment, net sales increased 29% due to the addition of Ainsworth. Excluding Ainsworth, net sales declined 2%. Sales were up in cat food, led by gains for the Meow Mix brand. In mainstream dog food, after excluding the impact of the planned SKU rationalization for Gravy Train, sales also increased, driven by gains for Nature's Recipe. For our pet snacks portfolio, sales declined slightly, reflecting a shift in timing for a key merchandising event. And lastly, within premium pet food, sales declined for the Natural Balance, reflecting ongoing softness in the pet specialty channel. Pet food segment profit increased 3% compared to the prior year. The profit contribution from Ainsworth was muted in the quarter due to the one-time fair market value adjustment related to the acquired inventory. Excluding Ainsworth, segment profit declined. The net impact of pricing and cost was unfavorable in the quarter as anticipated, but was partially offset by lower marketing expense. Lastly, in the international and away from home segment, net sales declined 1% compared to the prior year, reflecting slightly lower net price realization. Segment profit increased 8% as the lower pricing was more than offset by lower input cost. A decrease in marketing expense also contributed. Looking at cash flow and debt, first quarter free cash flow was $142 million. This represented a $93 million decrease compared to the prior year, reflecting an increase in working capital, primarily attributable to accounts receivable. Higher CapEx spending also contributed to the decline in free cash flow. We ended the quarter with debt of $6.7 billion, and based on a trailing 12-month EBITDA of over $1.6 billion, our leverage ratio stands at 4.1 times. We expect to focus on reducing leverage over the next couple of years. Let me conclude with an update on our full-year outlook. As noted in this morning's press release, we have updated our guidance to reflect the anticipated impact from the U.S. baking divestiture, which we expect to close at the end of this month. We now forecast net sales to approximate $8 billion. Along with the impact of the baking divestiture, the reduction from our previous guidance reflects lower than anticipated net sales in the first quarter. Adjusted earnings per share is expected to be in the range of $8.40 to $8.65. While unchanged from our original guidance, the current range reflects 8 months of foregone profit related to the baking divestiture, offset by an estimated $25 million non-cash gain on sale and the benefit from the use of net proceeds from the divestiture. As it relates to free cash flow, we now project a range of $770 million to $820 million compared to our previous range of $800 to $850 million. The reduction primarily reflects the foregone profit related to the baking divestiture. Our estimate for capital expenditures remains $350 to $370 million for the year. In addition to free cash flow, we anticipate $315 million in proceeds related to the divestiture, net of transaction costs and taxes. Assuming net proceeds are used to pay down debt, full-year net interest expense would approximate $210 to $215 million, compared to our original guidance of $220 million. In closing, let me reiterate Mark's comments that we are pleased with the start to the fiscal year, and while we recognize there is still much to be done, we are confident in our ability to execute on our roadmap as we proceed down the path of transforming our company to ensure sustainable long-term growth. We thank you for your time, and now we'll open the call up to your questions. Operator, if you'd please queue up the first question.
Thank you. The question and answer session will begin at this time. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing any numbers. Should you have a question, please press star 1 on your telephone. If you wish to withdraw your question, please press the pound key. For operator 0. As a reminder, please limit yourself to 2 questions during the Q&A session. Should you have additional questions, you may requeue and the company will take questions as time allows. Our first question comes from the line of Adam Lazar of Barclays. Your line is now open.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Andrew.
I went through a little quick name shift there, but it still starts with an A, so I think we're good. Thanks for the question. I guess I think one of the potential risks to the full-year EPS range that you guys have highlighted before was really the company's ability to keep the underlying business roughly flattish on an organic basis, you know, outside of the new platform launches and some of the continued growth in things like Uncrustables and in the premium coffee side. And I know the organic part was a bit weaker in fiscal 1Q than you had thought. It looks like you're basically flowing through that weakness to the full year. So I guess I'm trying to get a sense of what are the changes going forward that give you some comfort that there's less additional risk on the organic side for that underlying part of the business as we go through the year. And then as part of that, I think you had said that originally organic was going to be up around 2 for the full fiscal year. Is that now perhaps closer to around 1 or so, given what we saw in 1Q? Thank you.
Andrew, this is Mark Smucker. I'll start, and I think Mark might have a comment and the team to provide you more specifics. But, the first thing is, on Folger specifically, we did plan for it to be down a little bit. It was down more than we would have liked. That said, we do think there is some timing there, and some of that will come back. Likewise, I think in the prepared remarks with Jif, we do believe that the Jif core business will be up on a full-year basis. So I think that's why we still feel confident about that underlying business. And then just going back to the fact that our strategy is working in the sense that, you know, as we execute against whether it be the divestiture, the new launches of innovation, the generation of fuel through our cost savings initiatives, all of those things are doing exactly what they're supposed to be doing. And so I think that's why, again, we do have some confidence that we can continue to particularly deliver our EPS and then shore up the base.
Yeah, Andrew, this is Mark Belgia. Just in terms of the question about the organic, you know, it's probably between 0 and 1. And again, just to remind people that we did have a SKU rationalization program built into that, primarily around Gravy Train, that we called out in June as well. But I think if you just sort of think of it from 0 to a plus 1 versus the original plus 2.
Great. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from David Driscoll of Citi. Your line is now open.
Hi. Great. Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning, Dave.
So two questions. The first one is just on the gain on sale. Mark, can you quantify what the gain on sale is to EPS? And then normally we exclude that. So I want to say then that comes out of the guidance, because when you reiterate it, none of us have a gain on sale embedded in it. So could you just quantify that on an EPS basis? And then I have a follow-up on the innovation.
Yeah, so David, the $25 million I referenced is 16 to 17 cents of earnings. And maybe just to address why we treat it as we did, it's consistent with the way we treated a gain when we sold our milk business a couple of years ago. You've heard me say in terms of non-GAAP, we try to be pretty true to our definition of non-GAAP as we define it each quarter. And so we just view the gain on sale sort of falls outside of that non-GAAP adjustment classification. We obviously call it out so you guys can do with what you will. You know, one way to look at it for the current year, too, I know there's been some question about why would we include it. You know, it does somewhat offset the profit loss for this year. So while we certainly have to go after it next year and the out years, you know, it does kind of give us some offset from an EPS perspective. So that was our take on that.
Thank you for that. And then my second question is just on the innovation. You made a few comments about the good start for 1850. I believe you referenced at 70% ACV. I'm not sure if I didn't hear the ACV mentioned for the power-ups, but just could you give us a little bit more color on those two important launches, and what's the pacing? Like, what do you expect to see from this? Is it really not going to start to really move on 1850 until we get the advertising campaign going? Just a little color on what the cadence expected for the year on 1850 and Jif power-ups would be helpful.
Yep. Morning, David. Joe Stanziano here. Let me start. As you heard from both Mark and Mark, I mean, we're very pleased to this point, although caution that it is still early on the launch of 1850. We have achieved our stated target distribution of ACV, 70% ACV. We did that in the month of July. That was great. You heard we're selling nearly $1 million per week at retail, and that is improving each week, which is important. Our broad-based marketing program has been running for about 6 weeks now, so still early in the grand scheme of things, but we're pleased with the consumer reach there. Like any new launch, we're staying very close to the data. We're adjusting as we learn, both with our retail customers and with our consumers. But to your point, we're going to need to see more data behind it. There's some anecdotal data that would say where we've been in distribution for a while, we're getting good repeat on consumers who have aware of the product and have tried it. So we're going to be very focused on driving trial as much as we can with the consumers in the coming weeks. But more data will be needed to give you some more analysis on that.
Hi, David. It's Tina. I'll speak to Jif Power Ups. We achieved about a 60% ACV at the end of the first quarter. And the initial response, although it's early, is really, really positive. We're getting great results from a unit per store per week metric, and we are just now starting to turn on our campaign, which includes social and digital. TV started last week, and we do have a celebrity influencer, Neil Patrick Harris, that's helping us get that message out to our consumers. But we're staying pretty close to it and listening to our consumers. And the results so far are very positive. But just consider, we're just now going into the back-to-school time frame. So I think over this next quarter, we should see some additional great things come out of power-ups. But again, we just stay committed to the strategy and just reshaping our portfolio to make sure that we're offering those snacking options. But look forward to power-ups continuing to do well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Pablo Zunick of SIG. Your line is now open.
Hello.
Hi. Good morning, everyone. One for Mark Belgia first and one for Dave Lemon. So, Mark, in terms of the guidance, you've told us 16 cents is a one-off gain, but just remind us, what was the loss in terms of EPS from the sale of a baking unit? It's only 8 months this year. I think before you had said 25 to 30 cents, if you can remind us of that. And should we assume that $315 million are pretty much in net proceeds are going to go back to share buybacks? That's for Mark. And for Dave Lemon, and maybe Mark, you can also answer, it seems to me that the sales guidance cut in terms of organic sales from 2% to 0 to 1%, it's mostly due to softness in the pet food business. Is that true? And if you can expand in terms of, you know, what's new there that's guiding to that's pointing you to cut guidance there. Thanks.
Thanks, Pablo. Thanks for the question. So in terms of the lost profit, yeah, what we said when we announced the divestiture, we said 25 to 30 cents on a full year basis. So you can sort of pro rata that. And so if you take the gain on the sale that I mentioned earlier at 17 cents, if you take just an assumption that we pay down all the take the proceeds, pay down debt, and then some transitional services income that we're going to generate, it's pretty much a wash. It's pretty negligible loss for the period. So that's how that's played. The question about using the proceeds, as I called out in my scripted comments, we're going to assume that the debt pay down, we've got a lot of flexibility in what we do with that. You know, we've obviously done buybacks in the past, so that would be something we'd consider. But for modeling purposes and what we provided to you guys, we just assumed the full amount would be used for the debt pay down. And then maybe I'll start and then pitch it back to you guys if you have any other comments. So the reduction, if I remember your question, your reduction was what's driving the going from plus two to a flat to a plus one. You know, that I called out the sales shortfall really was sort of across the businesses. I mean, we called out our roast and ground. We talked about Jif a little bit. But I don't think I would necessarily say it's pointed to just pet. I don't know if you guys want to add anything to that. As far, maybe more importantly, it's just, you know, how we're going to, I think the question was asked earlier by Andrew about how we're going to deliver on, you know, perhaps Jif, which was down.
Yeah, this is Tina. I can jump in. I mean, just a reminder for the quarter, if we take baking out for consumer, we were flat versus prior year. But specifically for Jif, down for the quarter. However, feel very confident as we look to the balance of the year. The team is doing an amazing job continuing to work to close those opportunity gaps that we may have. But keep in mind, we're entering into back to school. We have great equity support out there as we speak. We have the launch of Jif power-ups and new distribution in place. So we feel really confident with our peanut butter business going forward.
Can I ask a quick follow-up to Dave Lemon? So just remind us, in terms of Nature's Recipe, when are you lapping the rollout into FDM? And then just some color in terms of the underlying growth in that business, and just a more color in terms of the innovation that's coming through that brand specifically. Thanks.
Sure. This is Dave Lemon, Pablo. Nature's Recipe, we've already lapped the entry of that, so we're into comp sales, if you will. Nature's Recipe is up 26% on the quarter in consumption, so we're seeing great consumer takeaway on that brand. And, you know, I would just add that although Natural Balance is down, and if you back out the Gravy Train exit, we're pretty flat, pretty much flat on our base business or our legacy business. And then APN, Ainsworth, is showing significant upside to the year. It's up 30%, 28% in consumption, and it has record shares really at 9% during the latest quarter. So we see a significant upside, and just looking to the future, you know, I think that we'll see this growth continue as we start to see the innovation cycle in the fourth quarter of this year really help out the brands. And it's across all of our brands, but in particular on snacking, where we have, Mark spoke of it, but new innovation coming behind the Milk-Bone brand in the engagement space and behind the Nature's Recipe brand in the natural meat space. So we feel really good about those brands.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Chris Groh of Stiefel. Your line is now open.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning, Chris.
Hi. Just had a first question for you, if I could, I guess for Mark Belgia. Do you still expect around $80 million in savings for the year? And I guess related to that, are you on track for that marketing spending you outlined for 1850 and for JIF? Are those sort of on track with what you expected based on this first quarter performance?
Yeah, Chris. Yeah, so in terms of the $80 million, we're tracking very well. You know, that was probably actually a little heavily skewed towards the benefits of the Curry contract, which we said, you know, went into effect last third quarter. So we're getting that. And then I think I mentioned in my scripted comments that the right spend in our zero-based budgeting program is we've actually not only built it into our budgets, but we're actually positive to our budgets. So I would actually say we're probably tracking ahead of, you know, one-fourth of that 80, if you will. The marketing right now, our forecast, has not adjusted down marketing hardly at all for the year. Some of the marketing that I commented on earlier was just more of a timing in our pet business more than anything. But if you look across our business, we're still projecting that $50 million, if you will, between the $30 million for coffee and $20 million for Power Up, and then some of the other brands that we commented on in June as well.
Okay. And then just a question perhaps for Mark Smucker. You obviously undertook this divestiture of the baking division. It obviously came in with a relatively low amount of proceeds, but it certainly is getting rid of a business that, had been really challenged on the top line. So I want to understand in terms of, this sort of portfolio shaping, is that the divestiture activity likely done? More you could do there? And then just any other observations about the price of selling assets because this multiple was quite low.
I'll start, and anybody else want to chime in? Thanks for the question, Chris. Clearly, just from a strategic standpoint, it clearly was, as we've reshaped our strategy and our business, clearly that was sort of an obvious one. So I think you guys have asked the question about the baking business now for a couple years, and you're just basically seeing the fruits of our labor. I think you asked, did you not? Are there other opportunities to divest? Did you ask that?
Yes. Just to understand, obviously not the names, if there are any, but just how you think about portfolio shaping and investor activity going forward. Yes.
Yeah. I think, we always will look at our portfolio, and as our strategy might shift, we potentially could do that. But at this time, I think that we feel pretty good where our portfolio is. The assets that we have are, some of the ones that you might be questioning are generating decent cash and so forth. So I think at this point, we feel very good that we have a relatively focused portfolio that we can really spend our time on and not, you know, really dilute our attention in other areas.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Farha Aslam of Stevens. Your line is now open.
Hi, good morning.
Hey, Farha.
Good morning.
First question is just, hi, on the gross margin line, there's clearly some coffee tailwinds, but some peanut headwinds, and you're offsetting some of that with pricing and promotions. How should we think about that gross margin for the year?
As far as Mark Velge, I think the way I would think about it is, you know, this quarter we were affected by, you know, we're still lapping our freight cost. We took the $11 million charge that hit COGS for the Ainsworth balance sheet adjustments. But it's going to be more positive for a couple reasons. One is we're going to have our cost synergies that relate to the COGS side of the house are going to start kicking in a little bit. Mix is going to play. So Tina had mentioned where Jif, traditional peanut butter, is going to pick back up. That's a high-margin business for us, so that's a positive mix play. So I think the way I would think about it, sort of broad brush, is for the next three quarters, sort of in the 39% type gross profit versus the whatever it was 37 plus this quarter is probably more reflective than the first quarter. I think that was just for the reasons I mentioned was lower than we would expect the rest of the year to end.
That's helpful. And my follow-up is on Ainsworth. How is the expansion into the pet specialty channel going, and kind of what kind of organic growth should we look for Ainsworth for the year?
Yeah, it's this is Dave Lemon, Farha, and I would say that the Ainsworth entry into the pet specialty segment is going extremely well. Again, just to ground everyone, growth through the first quarter, we saw consumption grow at 28%, up 26% from our last call. Our share on nutrition nearly sits at 9 and is up 6% from the prior period. You know, our snacks, cat and wet dog businesses are all high growth areas of the business, all growing at 50% or higher. And I would just say that finally giving us confidence moving forward is the white space opportunity on the brand. So as we look at military, pet specialty, club, and dollar channel, our cycle of innovation and our cycle of innovation that will be launched late in Q3 of this year, all of this to say is that, you know, the growth in pet specialty is not coming at the expense in MULO. It's truly incremental to the brand, and I think our shares and our consumption growth shows that.
So organic growth roughly for the year on Ainsworth and going forward, how should we think about that brand?
So we should think about it the way that we feel that the growth at 28% is certainly something that will continue. Fueled by both the white space opportunities and the innovation that I spoke of.
So that's a sustainable level? I'm just trying to get, is that lapping any kind of gain, like extraordinary gain? You expect that Ainsworth brand, the Nutrish brand, to grow 28%, the kind of annual growth rate?
That's correct.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Jason English of Goldman Sachs. Your line is now open.
Hey, good morning, folks.
Good morning, Jason.
Geez, lots of questions left to ask, but I'll try to be respectful of your time and maybe just focus on coffee. First, the sales benefit from pipeline fill. Behind 1850 Dunkin' canister, I assume that's a reason that your receivables are elevated. Can you give us any sort of quantification of how much benefit you had this quarter?
Jason, this is Mark Belzer. Let me address the AR, and then I'll let Joe address the coffee. It actually was, you know, that was part of it, but it was broader than that.
If you just look at the way sales fell in the quarter versus a year ago, there was just more sales dollars in the third month, July, if you will, of this year versus a year ago. So our day sales still are trending quite well. It's just more the mechanics of when the sales actually occurred within the 90 days of the quarter.
So you feel that your net sales are reflective of consumption? And if so, why aren't we seeing that in the Nielsen data? Where's the strength?
No, that's not what I was saying. What I was just trying to explain is why our AR balance is up.
This is Joe. I'll talk about 1850. Obviously, yeah, we've filled the pipeline, got that distribution up. What we're looking at is that weekly velocity, that just under $1 million number we quoted. We have to continue to work on improving that, looking at velocities, account by account to ensure that we're getting up to the place we need to be. So we anticipate, especially as we come into the higher coffee consumption period in the fall, that we'll continue to see that elevate. Dunkin' canister distribution is still relatively low. I mean, it's about 30% ACV, so I wouldn't say it's a broad distribution, and I think those numbers are fairly small as far as the fill. But again, early, seeing good movement on that as well.
Okay, so there's no quantification of pipeline fill on sales, is that right?
Yeah, we're not calling the number out, Jason. It's Mark again. But it was a contributor, but I would say the other areas that we called out, Bustelo and Dunkin', K-Cup and Bag was, drove more of the overall dollar sale increase for the quarter. But it clearly added to it.
Okay, and I know you guys were looking for price in coffee to be sort of net neutral in the back half of the year, but I think I heard rhetoric of higher trade spend coming to help sort of support Folgers. Should we now be expecting net price realization to be a bit deflationary? And if so, has your cost outlook changed? I know coffee costs have kind of continued to drift lower. Are you still looking for a net neutral position on cost?
Yeah, let me comment on the cost side, and then I'll let Joe comment on the price side. So you're right. I mean, green coffee costs continue to trend downward. I think yesterday, day before, RAPIC was at a dollar. So we do anticipate ongoing favorable cost. So that would be by far the most significant positive cost trend. If you look across other parts of the business, similar to what I said in June, we're still seeing unfavorable cost in both pet and in consumer. Across a whole host of both raw materials and packaging components, as along with freight. But in terms of the pricing impact, let Joe speak to that.
Yeah, Jason, I mean, I think, we continue to see those out futures drop a little bit. But from our perspective, again, we've talked about we're feeling much better with our cost price alignment. Our trade strategy and our promotional pricing is in really good shape for Q2 and Q3. We've got really strong merchandising support lined up, and we feel as we look through the rest of the fiscal year, we feel we're in a good spot with our pricing.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Rob Dickerson of Deutsche Bank. Your line is now open.
Great, thank you. My first question, I guess, is just to really clarify, maybe I'm just not going to go with math, sometimes the case. So in your revised guidance, right, the top line comes down a bit, and I thought you said, Mark Belgia, the one-time gain is pretty much a wash with the lost with the lost earnings. So I'm just curious, is the offset then just a slightly lower interest, or as if your sales are coming down a bit and we can just say, well, the gain's offsetting the lost earnings on baking, then, how do we just get to a flat earnings?
Yeah, so let me just, again, walk through the components of the divestiture. So we've got the lost profit that we commented on. We've got the gain. We've got some income that will come from, we're going to provide some services in the transition period and then assume pay down of debt to lower interest. So if you net all those components together, it's basically a wash on EPS in totality. I think where you're seeing some of the profit, the ability to maintain our original guidance despite the decrease in sales, is that it's really coming from cost savings. So some of, we mentioned on some of the raw material side, we still anticipate favorable spending against our right spend program Some of those costs are simply discretionary spendings that, you know, we'll take a hard look at, but we expect that to be positive throughout the year. So it's those components that I would say are offsetting the slight decline in our top-line estimate.
Okay, fair enough. And then, so in terms of, I think you said last quarter, you know, for the year, the expectation was for consumer profit to be flat to down slightly, and then also SD&A would be up, you know, mid to high single digit ex Ainsworth. Are those two guides still in place?
Yeah, I'd say that there's no change on the SD&A side. I mean, there might be some tweaking, you know, if we do end up a little bit favorable on the spending, but because marketing is relatively unchanged at this point, and that would be the biggest driver for the increase, that's true. The other reasons that drove the increase, some of the, you know, the leveling out of the compensation, things like that I mentioned in June, are still intact. So, and then on the consumer, I think that's probably right. I'd say the only risk there, and maybe to pet, is that freight is probably projecting a little bit worse. I don't think any of the other underlying input costs are too much different from what we thought 2 months ago, but freight is probably still a little more challenging than we would have thought 2 months ago.
Okay, and then just lastly, sales for the year. I know there are a lot of moving parts with respect to pricing, volume, launches, what have you, but just simplistically, you know, as we look out into Q2, I know you may not be giving quarterly guidance, but just, you know, how should we think about this acceleration, so to speak, for the year, given, you know, total Q1 was what, org was down 50 bips. You're kind of pointing to 0 to 1, so there's obviously, you know, an improvement baked in, but your compares get a lot more difficult. So, and pricing might be a bit more challenged. It sounds like there is an expectation for volume to essentially pick up as we go through the year. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think we said, you know, we would expect Jift, again, because of more of a timing thing, so we should see some of that coming, you know, through the back three quarters. We've talked about what, our trade spend support on roast and grounds issue. We should see improvement. You're going to see more of the ongoing benefit of, you know, our introductions. We're going to have the pet introductions coming here at the beginning of calendar 19. So those are all sort of factoring in. So there is a little bit of an acceleration, I think, versus what we had in Q1.
Super. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Rob Moskow of Credit Suisse. Your line is now open.
Hi, thank you. I guess just taking a step back, what kind of surprises me in the numbers is to see pricing down for the company in the quarter, and that's kind of a sequential, you know, deceleration in the trend. And, you know, the whole kind of commentary on packaged foods is that pricing should be moving in a positive direction, because a lot of companies are finally getting some price increases pushed through. Have you had some success, I guess, getting some pricing pushed through to retailers? And I think I've heard you say that in the past. And if so, why isn't it showing up in the numbers yet? Thanks.
Rob, it's Mark Smucker. I'll start. So a couple things. First of all, and just as you look across, we have had some success in moving on price where we need to, most recently in pet. And so we have been able to pass along pricing, and that particularly in a category that, as you know, in some of those areas, we're not the leader. So the fact that we've been able to get pricing through in pet, I think, is an indicator, a positive one. But as you look at coffee and peanut butter specifically, which are two of our, you know, larger categories, you know, coffee, we have it's still deflationary. I mean, we're seeing some of the lowest coffee costs that 10 years. I mean, since we've been in the business, we've never seen coffee costs this low. And so given where our hedging position is, you know, we will continue to enjoy those lower costs. They haven't crossed, as you know, as you may assume, another threshold that would indicate a hard list price change. That's why you're seeing us reinvest some of the benefit in trade. And then in peanut butter, you know, we had taken a pricing action probably about a year ago. And so, again, although we are seeing some inflation in peanuts, our actual costs have not crossed a threshold that would trigger us to move on price. So that's sort of, I think, you know, our business, given the commodities and the underlying costs is probably a little bit unique compared to the industry, just given which of those commodities that we're trading in and when and how we've taken price over the last year or so.
Yeah. Hey, Rob, it's Mark Bell. Just to sort of add to Mark's comment, Crisco, for example, you know, the oil market has continued to be fairly flat to down, and so we took a price decline, and that, you know, had a pretty significant impact when you just look at the overall net impact on price to the company. So, but again, it kind of underscores Mark's commentary around the commodity nature.
Hey, Rob, this is Dave Lemon. Just to comment a little bit more on pet, we did take price on select items within our snacks portfolio late in Q1 due to higher input costs that we were not able to recover. And also we took price, if you remember, late in Q3, early Q4 on Natural Balance from last fiscal. So there's two examples that we're able to get pricing through. And as you know, it's not getting any easier. It's getting more and more difficult to get pricing through, seeing that we've been able to pass along pricing so long as it's cost justified. So.
Okay. So the plan then for the year is, you know, pricing will probably be a negative for the year, but gross profit dollars can still be up because of the commodity direction. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's fair. Yep.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Thank you. I will now turn the conference call back over to Mark Smucker.
Well, just again, thank you for your time today, for joining us. We appreciate it. We look forward to seeing many of you in Boston in a couple weeks, and then we have our Investor Day in New York on October 9th, so we look forward to all of that. And just I would just close by saying that we are very pleased with our results for the quarter and the fact that our strategy continues to yield results. And so, again, thank you, and we'll see you all soon.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes our conference call for today. Thank you for participating and have a nice day. All parties may now disconnect.